Barbara is on a brief trip to the Holy Land. She should be back tomorrow night. That's Texas for the uninitiated. If you would please turn to 1 Kings, it's about time to start. We've been working our way through 1 Kings. We took a day and went through all of 1 Chronicles because that parallels the things that we find here. Very soon, not quite yet, but very soon, the books of the prophets are going to start to sort of be appropriate because they fall in with some of the things that happen later in 1 Kings and across 2 Kings. Some of those do. We finished last time watching the preparations for the temple. You remember God told David that he couldn't build it, but he didn't tell David he couldn't prepare. And so the outcome was that that David brought a whole bunch of materials together and had those all ready. Solomon then added to that, mostly with forced labor of one kind or another, armies of people doing the work. And most of that is now finished in terms of where we got, which was through chapter 7. And so we're turning now to chapter 8 of 1 Kings. I have a study Bible that has titles for sections. And the title for this section is "The Ark is Brought into the Temple." Where's the Ark? Verse 1 of chapter 8 gives you a clue. Where's the Ark? Solomon then summoned the elders of Israel to Jerusalem. He summoned the elders of Israel to Jerusalem. And in essence, you can sort of insert this, instructed them to bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord up from where?
Zion.
Zion, yours may say. Other translations will say? The city of David. Mine says up from the city of David, comma, that is Zion. Okay, so far? Where's the city of David?
Where the temple
I thought Bethlehem was called the city of David.
Bethlehem?
Wasn't Bethlehem called the city of David?
Yeah, but I don't know.
Turns out, no. That's the ancestral home of David.
Right.
But the city of David is the name of the capital that David built when he captured Jerusalem.
That's right.
But, if you listen carefully, the ark is coming from the city of David to Jerusalem. That sounds like two different places, right? Okay. You have to go to some Bible maps. If you have a computer, if you have Google, you can do this without too much trouble.
Or if you go on
Norman's trip and he might explain this. Or if you have the kind of Bible that some of us have, if you turn all the way to the back, Genesis to maps, there's usually some maps back there. You can maybe see this. What is currently within the walls of Jerusalem today is the area that includes both of these places. The Temple Mount is in the upper right-hand corner of the maps. Most maps are oriented north, so that would be the, I'm geographically challenged, the northeastern corner, okay? And the city of David is in the southwestern corner. And there's a valley in between. Keep an eye on that valley. Some things are going to happen in that valley in a little while. Okay? So, when they talk about Jerusalem, that's really that southwestern portion, which is called the city of David, what they call, and you've heard this phrase now, the Temple Mount. That's the highest spot, as I understand it, the highest spot in Jerusalem. That's sort of over here. And looking back on the one trip that I've taken to Jerusalem, I'm pretty sure I was standing on a viewing point that probably was in the original city of David region, because I was looking across to the northeast and could see the Dome of the Rock, which is the Muslim mosque that sits up there. Okay? So, they're bringing the Ark. Now, where has the Ark been? It's been there. It came in, you remember, when David was dancing before it. It had been over towards where Philistia was. It stayed there for a very long time. David had brought it in. His wife had been disgusted with him because he was dancing in a linen loincloth, and he was twirling in his linen loincloth, and she thought that was not an appropriate thing for a king to do. And his response was, "I wasn't dancing for you." A very interesting phrase. And basically he banished her because of that. The beautiful thing is, if you look, he was coming, at the time she confronted him, he was coming from spending a whole day blessing the people of Jerusalem, blessing the people of Israel, blessing everyone in the name of the Lord. And Scripture says he was on his way to bless his house when his wife confronted him and said, "You're a disgusting pig." That's pretty much a killer for the idea of trying to bless your house. And so there are those undercurrents, but we've already looked at all that. But the idea is that the ark made it that far. What was it that housed the ark in that place? Either the tent or a series of tents with one in the middle. What was the name of that tent in your translation? You've been reading this, right? Some of you, Dick, you guys are off the hook. The village people are, you know, you've been away long enough. Did you like that? Did you like that at all? Welcome back to the village people. I thought it was funny. What do they call the place where it was? The tent of meeting is one translation. What are the other words? Because if you hear it in different translations, you want to know what you're hearing. It's also called, my translation often calls it, the tabernacle. And sometimes the place where the ark actually was the sanctuary within the tabernacle. Okay, tent of meeting and tabernacle are the two terms I think are the most familiar to me. So it had made it into Jerusalem, and because David had put his capital there, that had become known as the city of David. And that's different from the appellation that Bethlehem got, which was the ancestral home of David's family group within the tribe that he was part of, Judah. Okay? So it's been in a tent and it has to be moved. Now, do you remember when they moved it from Philistia towards Jerusalem? Somebody died when they tried to keep the ark from falling off the ox cart, right? So there's very specific, special ways this has to be done. And that's what you find in here. It's not given in the detail that other things have been given. Essentially, verse 6 is the heart of it. But it does say the priests did their job of bringing that. And it talks at one point, at the end of verse 7, it talks about the winged creatures forming a canopy over the ark and its shafts. What are the shafts? There were golden rings with wooden sticks that went through them. Those were borne on the shoulders of the priests, so no one would touch the ark. Okay. Verse 8 says they were so long that the ends of the shafts could be seen from the holy place in front of the Debir. Mine says Debir. What does yours say at that point? This is verse 8. Yours says sanctuary? Inner sanctuary. Thank you, because inner sanctuary is better. Does it say anything else? Because there is another word we learned last week, although some of you who weren't here, you're off the hook. What's the word for Debir? That's the Holy of Holies. How big was it?
It was a cube.
What was its size? 30 by 30 by 30 in units of cubits. And one of the things my students have to do is learn how to change units. Can you change units to feet?
No.
Foot and a half per cubit. So that's about 45 feet. Okay. How tall was this place? 45 feet. Right. So, and how long was the temple?
The whole temple.
The interior dimension, anyway. 90 feet. So this occupies, 90 cubits. So 30 cubits, excuse me, would be what fraction? Can you guys still do fractions? This is something you might have learned in school. It's 1/3. Okay. On the wall of a Sunday school classroom that I was in on Saturday, it's got a picture and a cutaway so that you can see the inside of the temple. And it shows the wall separating the holy place exactly halfway down the space. Is that correct?
No.
That's not
so
correct.
So Bill, yesterday we were in there with choir practice, and Bill was quizzing
you saw
me.
That, you saw that?
Yeah, quizzing me.
Yeah, I was checking to make sure that Hal had that. Make sure that Hal had that right.
You got to pay attention, January. You don't know when he's going to let the call in.
End of verse 8. End of verse 8 has a very fascinating phrase. What does that phrase say? They're still there today. What day was today? Because that's not today today.
No, this back in Old Testament.
What day was this?
This would be the Solomon.
This would be when the historian, when the chroniclers were writing. This would have been true. This temple was destroyed by the Babylonians, and it wouldn't have been true after that time. Okay? Verse 9. What was in the ark? Almost nothing. Almost nothing. What was in the ark? The stone tablets on which were written the Ten Commandments. Who wrote them on there?
God did.
No. No. Who wrote it?
Moses.
Moses wrote it. The ones that God wrote, he broke when he saw the sin of the people. And when he came back up the mountain, we did Exodus. You're supposed to remember these things, right, Al? It's tough when the quizzes come, isn't it? Moses wrote it at God's dictation. At least that's what Exodus says. So this was essentially the second copy of the tablets, because the first had been shattered in Moses' response to the sin of the people. Can you hold your place there? Is that possible? Can you turn to Hebrews? Chapter 9. Those of you who have electronic devices, can you press the proper buttons? Can you find Hebrews chapter 9? Hebrews chapter 9. If you found James or 1st and 2nd Peter, you went a little too far. If you find 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Timothy, you're almost there. Just keep going a little bit.
Hebrews,
James, 1st and 2nd Peter. Hebrews, James, 1st and 2nd Peter. Did you guys not learn that? Maybe you did. Some of you did. Okay. Hebrews chapter 9. Have you found it?
Mm-hmm.
Ready to go? The first covenant had its laws governing worship and its sanctuary. A sanctuary on this earth. There was a tent which comprised two compartments. The first had a lampstand, the table, and the loaves of permanent offering were kept. That was called the holy place. Beyond the second veil, a second compartment which was called? Mine says the holy of holies, yours says the most holy place, to which belonged the gold altar of incense and the ark of the covenant plated all over with gold. In this were kept. What was kept in there? A gold jar containing
manna.
What does manna mean? What is this stuff? That's what the word manna means. What is this stuff? There was a gold jar containing manna. And Aaron's branch, when Aaron was chosen as priest, he was chosen by the budding of cut branches, branches that couldn't possibly have life, had life in them. And
stone tablets.
How do I reconcile these two accounts? I don't. The historian has chosen to say the tablets were there. He has chosen to say there's nothing in the ark except this. Possibly these things were put in there later, and the writer of Hebrews is calling that back. Otherwise, I don't know how to reconcile. This is one of those things that sort of falls in between the cracks. But there is a report later that at some other time, there were other things in there. It could be those had been in there, and they weren't in there by the time it came into the temple itself, because the description, as you saw, was a tent, not a temple. Okay. So I'm back in 2 Kings 8. Are you?
First Kings 8.
I'm not there. I'm in 1 Kings. I said I was in 2 Kings, but that was not true. I'm in 1 Kings 8. Are you still there? Okay. The temple has been built. It stands in all of its glory. All of its furnishings are in place. All of its furnishings are completed and correct. And the last thing is the ark is brought in. What does the ark represent? It represents the covenant. This is the tail end of verse 9. The covenant which the Lord made with the Israelites when they came out of Egypt. Verse 10. When the priests came out of the holy place, what had they been doing in there?
Putting
the ark in place. When the priests came out, what happened? Does it say a cloud or does it say the cloud? Yours says a cloud, rats. Mine says the, and most of them say the. The cloud. Footnote H. See Exodus 13. See Exodus 19. What happened way back there when the cloud came down on Mount Sinai before the people? What did it represent? It represents God's active presence in that place at that moment. The cloud filled the temple of the Lord, and because of the cloud, what does it say? The priests could not stay and perform their duties. Period. New sentence. For the glory of the Lord filled the temple. Did God fill the temple? An argument could be made. God fills everything. God's glory filled the temple, and it was observed in what form? As a cloud. When the children of Israel were led in the wilderness for 40 years, what led them? A cloud by day? A pillar of fire by night. Is that two different things? No.
That's the same thing.
That is not two different things, or at least I don't believe it is. During the day, with the blazing light of the sun, you saw the cloud. At night, when the light of the sun goes away, the fire that's inside the cloud could be seen. That's the same thing. And that was the glory of God. Verse 12. Solomon said, the Lord has chosen to dwell in thick cloud. Verse 13. I have built you a princely dwelling, a residence for you forever. Does yours have any interesting words that need to be commented on in that little bit?
Lofty temple.
Lofty, magnificent.
Glorious.
Exalted. I built you a princely, exalted, glorious, magnificent, did I leave anything out? House. A residence for you forever.
You can live.
Okay? Something powerful happens when that happens. When are we next going to hear about the glory of God in this way? I think it's in Ezekiel.
I read Isaiah 6.
Isaiah 6, he's not seeing the earthly temple. He's seeing the heavenly reality that the earthly temple is a model of, I believe. Right? Isaiah 6 is a great thing to think about. When's the next time we see the glory of God in the temple? I think it's in Ezekiel. And what's going on with the glory of God? It's leaving. And it's an awesome thing to think about. For a period of time, we have this. Verse 14. I want to just walk through this a little bit. Verse 14 to verse 21, Solomon quotes God's words to David about the temple. What did God say about the temple? God said to David, you're not going to build it. A son of yours is going to be on the throne. Solomon claims that he was named. Maybe this isn't the place. Verse 17, verse 18, the God of Israel said to my father David, you have set your heart on building a temple for my name, and in this you have done well, and yet you are not the man to build the temple, but your son yet to be born to you will be the one to build the temple for my name. What do we need to notice in that verse? I believe that was verse 19. There's something powerful and special. I brought it to your attention last week, but it's been a week and you are forgetful. My students can do this in 2 days. It might take you a whole week to forget things. What's the important thing? What has he said up earlier? I have built you a princely dwelling, a residence for you forever. But what did God say to David? God didn't say, your son is going to build me a dwelling place. What does it say? A place for my name. A place for my name. Don't miss it. It occurs at least 3 times across this section from 4 to 17. From 4 to 21, excuse me. Verse 16. again, quoting God speaking to David, "From the day I brought my people Israel out of Egypt, I chose no city in any of the tribes of Israel to have a temple built where my name should be. But I did choose David to rule my people Israel. My father David had his heart set on building a temple for the name of the Lord, the God of Israel. But the Lord said to my father David, 'You have set your heart on building a temple for my name. In this you have done well, and yet you're not the man to build the temple, your son yet to be born to you. He will be the one to build the temple for my name.'" Is that four times or is that five times so far? What is the purpose of the temple? It is a place for God's name to be. Verse 20, Solomon pronounces something vitally important. Can you see what he says? He declares that the promises of God have been fulfilled. Fulfilled, not partly filled. God has kept the promise he made. I have succeeded my father. I am seated on the throne of Israel as the Lord promised. I have built the temple for the name of the... Are you starting to get sensitized to this now?
Yes.
"And in it I have made a place for the ark containing the covenant of the Lord which he made with his ancestors." Verse 22, "In the presence of the whole assembly of Israel, Solomon stood facing the altar of the Lord and stretching his hands toward heaven, he said..." And he begins to speak to God. This is important. He's now speaking to God. He's praying, reminding God of what he said about the succession to the throne and about David's sons and about David's descendants. "God of Israel, there's no God like you in heaven above or earth beneath, as loyal to the covenant and faithful in love to your servants, as long as they walk wholeheartedly in your way." What happens when somebody's reading something and they suddenly slow down? What are they trying to accomplish? I'm trying to emphasize that you should pay attention to that. How long does the covenant last? Verse 24, "You have kept the promise you made to your servant, as you promised you would. Today you carried it out by your power. And now, Lord God of Israel, keep the promise which you made to your servant David when you said, 'You will never lack for a man to sit before me on the throne of Israel,' comma, provided that..." Hal, you're a lawyer. These are called qualifying, what's the name, attestments or something like that to the contract.
Yeah, well, contingencies.
Contingencies, there you go. You know, this is what you promised to do. "If your sons are careful about how they behave, walking before me as you yourself have done." I would invite you to have the sense of a very dark cloud, a long way away, but visible from this spot. Who's speaking?
Solomon.
What is Solomon saying? "I understand that you made a promise, and I understand that that promise is contingent on the behavior of David's sons. I'm the first of those sons, so it's contingent on my behavior." How's he going to do? We are at chapter 8. By the time we get to chapter 12, what's going to have happened? It's all collapsed. Why did it collapse? Right here. And the big picture, it's not the only picture, but it is a big picture that you want to keep your eyes on across here, is how God could make so many promises of such power, and somebody would be so foolish, so dumb, as to ignore what they said. What is Solomon famous for? How'd that work for him? It didn't seem to work. And if you don't see that arc as a main thing, and not because, oh, that's what happened to Solomon, where do you need to look? Is God doing that for me? Is he making promises to me that say, if you walk in my ways, I'm going to begin to bless you. I'm going to bless you when you get up. I'm going to bless you when you sit down. I'm going to bless you when you get up in the morning. I'm going to bless you when you go to bed. I'm going to bless you in your fields. I'm going to bless you in your houses. What am I quoting? You've studied this with me. What am I quoting? I'm quoting Deuteronomy. And we ignore those promises. and we ignore those promises to our shame, to our peril. Why do we do that? Ask yourself why Solomon did that, and maybe you start to get some clues, because Solomon was a human being. The promises God made to him were awesome. Before we get through, it is my intention. Are you? Some of you are too young, and some of you are too old. A few. This is Goldilocks moment. Some of us are just right. I intend to blow your mind with something that I don't believe very many of you have seen. There is an astounding couple of verses that are coming. And they fit into this context. Somebody is given an unbelievable, amazing promise for God that is how contingent. Walk in my ways. Follow my paths. Obey my laws. They don't do it. And what happens? Disaster. How long do we have to wait? We don't even get out of this book. We're not even close to the end of this book before we hit that. It's just around the corner.
Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
When you started this, you said, how could someone be so dumb? You could substitute someone with the word nation.
How could a nation be so dumb? Ooh. How could a church be so dumb? Ooh. How could a family be so dumb? How could a city be so dumb? How could I be so dumb? Please, Lord. Let me pause. You brought up Isaiah 6. Let me just remind you of what's sitting over in Isaiah 6. Isaiah is a fascinating book. We're not ready to study it yet, so this is a free preview, right? You open the book of Isaiah. Inquire this morning, our brand new, wonderful, please welcome him when you can, minister of music, read to us a few verses out of Isaiah 1. And what's the prophet doing? He is pointing his finger at every problem around him, and he is sternly correcting those problems. And by the time he gets to chapter 5, it has reached a crescendo, and six times...